How to pay less and sell more by setting LinkedIn ads. It's very important today. We can't ignore this platform because you can get real leads, customers. And I'm so excited to discuss this topic with AJ Wilcox. How are you?
Anatoly, I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, it's a big pleasure. I remember our first episode that was so valuable, great insights. You led me to an emergency room to consume all this information, you know, to understand how it works. Because I often see when companies do this wrong, you know, they set up just use best practices, generic strategies, but it doesn't work without the right data. AJ, before we start, just tell more about yourself, experience, background, remind about your business and how you make marketing different on LinkedIn.
Sure thing. So my story was I started out on LinkedIn ads back in 2011. I was working at a previous company and my experience was in Google ads and SEO. So I go into this new position. I'm the first digital marketer at this company before they went public. And I'm talking to my boss who says, oh, okay, all of your strategies, go ahead and execute them. But just so you know, we started a pilot with LinkedIn ads about 2 weeks ago. See what you can do with it. And I didn't want to look stupid to my new boss. So I went and jumped into the platform and started trying to figure things out. And about 2 weeks later, I had a sales rep who came up to me and said, hey, AJ, we don't know what you're doing over here, but we're fighting over your leads. Keep it up. And I was curious. I went to go look at these leads and found out, looked in the CRM, and all of them that they were talking about were sourced from LinkedIn ads. And that was not the only ad channel I was using. So long story short, I ended up scaling that account to become LinkedIn's largest spending account over the next 2.5 years. And then said, all right, there has to be more companies than just this one that LinkedIn ads are going to be good for. And so I started B2 Linked in 2014. And we're an ad agency. There's only about 12 of us based in the state of Utah in the US. And LinkedIn ads is all we do. We're one trick ponies and we do that one thing very well. And one thing I'll mention, Anatoly, you're from Ukraine. I lived in Ukraine for 2 years, from 2003 to 2005. Nice. So we've got that connection there. So yeah, that's me.
Nice, nice. Great. I want to ask from the first question that I usually see from marketers, when I ask what kind of paid marketing they use, and most of them reply Facebook, Google, and they ignore LinkedIn, Twitter, other platforms. Some can use YouTube, but not always. So can you tell why marketers ignore LinkedIn? I can share why they ignore from my experience. Most of them reply they can't get enough data. They have no enough features that Facebook and Google can provide. But I think things changed the last time because LinkedIn created new tools, features that you can use it. And any tips why LinkedIn is better today for B2B?
Yeah. So I think with Google, Google is the first ad platform on the scene that people really got excited about and built their whole careers on. And I think it was really simple. Google had this search engine that had already been well-loved and providing a lot of value for lots of years. And they roll out this ad platform and say, hey, minimum of 5 cents per click. Anyone who wants traffic, come bid on your keywords. And it was priced so low that you couldn't not have success on the platform. Anyone who's searching for your keywords, there might not be a lot of volume of those keywords, but because the costs were so low, you're going to have success. Then came Facebook, and all I heard for a long time about Facebook early on was like, oh, the targeting's garbage. It's not working, but boy, it's cheap. You can get a lot of traffic for, you know, a third of a cent per click. That was pretty amazing. So of course, everyone who tries it out, they're going to go and tell their friends and it's all going to spread. The big difference with LinkedIn, when it very first started was like, yeah, we're a minimum of $2 per click. Sorry. And it didn't leave a whole lot of room for anyone to come in and have quick wins and tell their friends because it's always been an expensive ad platform. And now many years later, it's like $8 to $16 per click on average. And if you don't know what you're doing, and to your point, Anatoly, having data that it's actually telling you whether or not it's working. You don't want to keep paying $16 for a click. You want to go to a cheaper ad platform. So I think the fact that people are seeing now the success behind LinkedIn and willing to invest more is because they've probably heard people like you and I talking about successes we've had, but then they're also, they've worked on the back end getting the data in their CRMs and their sales processes all ironed out. And now they actually have enough confidence to say, yeah, we can afford $16 a click for this great traffic.
Yeah. For me, I don't care about the cost per click. I care about what this cost per click can do. You know, if it brings customers who will buy my product and I can get back my investment to marketing, why not? Yeah. I'm not sure it's a good idea today to chase low paid for clicks. It's better to get quality clicks. And I want to ask about collecting data. You know, it's interesting that, for example, I usually work out with my son in the morning. We go to pull-ups, proof. Yeah, you can see on my hands, you know. Yes. And once I got on YouTube some new videos recommendation about pull-ups. I was curious how it happens, you know, how it happens that YouTube knows that I'm interested about pull-ups. I never searched for that. And I read a book about pregnant women, you know, when grocery stores can learn that women change habits and they understand they're pregnant and they started to pitch some products. So I'm interested about collecting data without creating the feeling that someone follows you. You know, people are angry about that. They're not interested that someone follow them. So any tips how to do it right?
You know, with LinkedIn, this is actually really easy because most of the time we're selling something that's business to business that isn't dependent on a user's actions or what they like or what they care about. Most of it is who they are professionally. Because if you tell me that you are a chief operating officer in an e-commerce company, I can probably figure out very quickly, there are some pain points that you're having and there are certain things that are going to keep you up at night. And if I have a solution to that problem that's going to help you, I don't need to know much more about your personal life other than you have this job responsibility and we have a solution for that. So I think LinkedIn gets to not have to participate too much in that, like, ooh, are we invading people's privacy by trying to figure out what they're searching for? We don't have to deal with that too much.
Mm-hmm. And how do you usually collect data to get this data? Do you use LinkedIn Navigator or any other tools to find this data?
Yeah, I would say most of the time we're using LinkedIn. A lot of times we're going to use the sales department for our client. So if we go to our client, we say, hey, who is your ideal client profile, your ICP? And they tell us maybe some different job titles, maybe different industries and company sizes. And then we say, what are the pain points that they feel? If they go, oh, we don't really know, then we can say, let's go get on a phone call or get on a Zoom with someone on your sales team because they talk to the clients all day long. Then the salesperson has all kinds of information of, yeah, I talk to these people all day, every day. Here are the things that I hear from them that they're concerned with. Here are the things that I hear about competitors and why they might've gone with them or why we're better than them. Here are the blockers or the people that when they say, hey, I need to go check with so-and-so before I can make this decision. Now they're telling you who the buying committee is, and you can file that away and maybe start being able to target the buying committee in the future to help smooth deals over. So get sales involved. They're your best source of information about your client.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I couldn't agree more because salespeople have the right data about your customers. You can learn from that. And I'm interested about creating the right marketing message because I often see when marketers use AI or just copy competitors to create some paid ads that it's hard to get attention with this paid ads. And for example, let me share a story about Lloyd Richardson. You know, he wrote a book 11 years ago. He spent a lot of time with marketing, with sales, but he couldn't sell this book for a long time, 11 years. Then his daughter posted content on TikTok from account with zero followers. But this video was so creative. I watched this video, of course. I'm curious how to create such video that got plus 50 million views. And today this book is bestseller on Amazon. So the offer couldn't sell this book 11 years. Then only one simple video did all this job because of creativity. And I check out this video. It's not like nice looking design. No, it's simple message, but creative. I got, you know, curiosity. I need to read this book. It's interesting because the author spent so much time to write this book. Short message provided a good job that all other marketing and sales efforts before. So can you tell how to create this creativity with your paid ads?
Yes. So Anatoly, you bring up a really good point, which is your original offer. That's what we say in an ad. It's like what we're offering in exchange for someone's attention. Mm-hmm. In the case that you just shared with the book didn't change over the 11 years. It was still just as valuable. It still had the same paragraphs, the same structure, but what changed was the message in the way that you describe it. What I want all of you to think about is a recent purchase that you may have made. And it doesn't matter if it's like a big business to business purchase or a smaller consumer purchase. We all make purchase decisions emotionally and they go through a similar process. But I want you to think, maybe there's a brand out there that you weren't ever aware of, and then you became aware of it, and then you ended up being a customer. Think about what different touch points you needed with that brand in order to get your attention. We know if you were not even product aware, there were probably some initial touch points with that brand where they're talking to you about maybe solving a pain or a problem that you experience or feel. Then after that, you've become, you know, that's kind of like that pain aware. Then you can start looking and considering solutions out there. Sorry, this sounds jumbled because it's kind of jumbled in my mind. But once they figure out like, oh, okay, there are solutions to this. Let me start exploring them. And then once they're aware of solutions, then you want them to be aware of your product. So this is a multi-step thing. You're probably not ever going to put an ad up on LinkedIn saying like, hey, chief marketing officers, here's this new software that you need, and then have someone go and buy right then. It doesn't happen. You have to walk them through that process of becoming aware, realizing the need, and then actually considering your product over another competitor's products.
Nice, nice. Well. I want to know about collecting enough data than over data, because data experts often share that when you have more data than you need, it might confuse what to do. And for example, I often see website pages, landing pages with a lot of details, information, many products, and I don't know what to click, where to go, what to buy. And I love Apple. You know, if I open apple.com, I can see only iPhone, nothing else. I can't find MacBook, AirPods, Apple Watch, but I can scroll down to find other products. But iPhone is responsible for 40% of all sales. A lot. Wow. So Apple pays attention to the best-selling product. Can you tell how to collect enough data, not over data, because it might confuse what to do?
Yeah, for sure. I was listening to a well-known conversion optimization expert. His name's Chris Daly. And he was giving this presentation. He said one of the first tests that he recommends for a brand who hasn't done any testing yet is something that he calls an existence test. It's basically, okay, your landing page or your website has all of these elements. Let's try removing one of them or multiples of them, and let's see what happens to your performance. And more often than not, simplifying a page actually gets better performance. And we're talking about deleting elements of a website or a landing page that makes the marketer go, ooh, don't take that away. That, you know, we want them to see other products. Like, no, like you're talking about with Apple, take away the distractions, show them just, you know, what they're likely there for. With data collection on LinkedIn, there are some cool things that we can do. And the nice thing is, like, most advertisers, their data is just going right into LinkedIn ads and they don't have to deal with it. They're never going to be experiencing an overabundance of data. It comes down to, like, LinkedIn is storing this data for you. And then if you're curious, you can go and export a report. But some of the cool things that I like are, yeah, let's say you're going after senior level marketers with your ads. Most advertisers would put together one single campaign. It would be the job function of marketing with all seniorities from manager and above, all the way up to chief CMOs. And when you start running this campaign, you get very little data back because you're going to have some manager level people who are lower there acting a certain way. And then you're going to see the chief level marketers acting a different way, and then everything in between, but all of them are smushed together in one big audience. And so you can't tell who cares about what. But what I like to do is I will break this audience out into 4 to 16 different campaigns, broken out by little micro instances of, and I say micro, but like I get these audiences down to 20 to 80,000 in size. So they're not tiny, tiny. But now what I can do is look at the performance of the same ads. I'm working with the same ads I was doing before, but now I can see, oh, this A/B test of my ads, managers like this ad better than that one. And they respond to this text more than others, these words. Whereas chief level marketers, they care about other words. This is all data that you can get when you are breaking your audiences up into different segments so that you can measure them separately. Then there's all kinds of cool data stuff you can do later. Like once that data gets into your CRM and into your sales process, you can marry that back up to your ads data and measure things like what's my cost per sales qualified lead, or my cost per meeting with sales, or my cost per proposal, or even what, you know, the holy grail of B2B marketing and sales, which is your return on investment, how much you paid in ads in order to get someone to close a deal with you.
Nice, nice. Awesome. You mentioned about pain points, to know your customer pain points. And you remind me another presentation from Apple when Tim Cook shared about new Apple Watch. And he didn't share features of this Apple Watch because many other smartwatches might have the same features, but he shared three stories how Apple Watch can decide my problems. You know, after watching this presentation, I bought three pairs for me, for my son, for my wife, because these guys probably kill me, you know, if I buy only for myself. But, you know, I watched this presentation. I got it. I need to have it. I want to own it because this Apple Watch can simplify my life, decide my problems. That's why I did it. So can you tell how to create this feeling? How to create the feeling of owning something that big brands can create with their marketing?
Well, Anatoly, I think you hit on a really important topic, which is don't try to feature dump in your ads. It would be really easy if you're trying to sell certain software and you know you have competitors, but you're not mentioning the competitors in the ads. It would be really easy to say, our software can do this bullet list of activities for you, but that's not what people care about. In order to make the emotional connection, you have to figure out what problem they need solved and show them how you can solve it better than anyone else. It sounds really simple, but in practice, I was actually in a workshop here not too long ago with a marketing strategy professor, and we had a small group. There were about six of us in a big conference room, and for about 2 hours, we were sticking sticky notes up on the walls of this conference room, So we could say like, what is our product? And then what are the different features of that product? And then what are the main level benefits that you get from that? And then what are the more specific benefits that you get from each of those main benefits? And then at the very top, you get into like, what are the values that each of your, and by the way, this is a framework put together by Drew Boyd. So if anyone's curious about marketing strategy, check him out. He's an author on LinkedIn Learning. But it was really cool to boil this down, because I could talk about any of our clients' different products and features, but actually putting a lot of thought into what are the benefits that are actually driven because of each of those features. Those are the kinds of things we mention in ads. We don't talk about the how many gigabytes of storage your Apple Watch has. We don't care. Like, this is why Apple was famous for their iPod. They didn't talk about how many gigabytes it held, even though me as a technology nerd, I would love to know that. But they just told you it's X number of songs in your pocket, period.
Yeah,
that was enough to make people go, I don't care how big the hard drive is. I just want to know how much of my music can I fit my whole catalog in my pocket.
Yeah, nice. Love it. I want to ask you about AI. I can't ignore this topic because so many questions about AI. And my team is creating the tool that can create text for all website pages. So just at your website to get text, structure, titles, descriptions for all website pages. And it's called Golden Button. Guys, it's not. You need to edit. You need to do some job manually. It's important. And I see all companies, all writers use AI today. I don't know even one great writer who didn't try AI. And I cooperate with many writers who can write for Forbes, Bloomberg, many great websites, well-known publications. All of them use AI. Can you tell how you use AI today, how you adapt to your marketing message, and how it can help to create much better marketing or anything else like that?
Yes, Anatoly, I'm so glad you asked about AI, because one of the ways that we're using it internally is to help us write ad copy. So Imagine, you know, we have a client who they're saying, hey, what sort of new ads can we put together? Our other ads are starting to become stale. And our team, we used to, you know, block 30 minutes or 60 minutes out and write a whole bunch of different headlines and a whole bunch of different intros and descriptions to present it to the client. And what we ended up doing as a team fairly recently in the last couple months, we started sharing prompts with each other. Like, hey, I got ChatGPT to write me some ad copy. Here was the prompt I used. And someone else on the team would say, oh, I had the same thing, but I used a slightly different prompt. And I told it to follow this methodology or framework in writing the ad copy. And so we've gotten really nerdy about it. But you know, it's obviously not perfect, and it's not going to be perfect, at least for a long time. But we can tell it, hey, write us 10 versions of ads for this client, given this product and service and whatever. It's going to come back and like six of them, we're probably just going to throw away. Two of them are going to be great. We can show to the client as is. And then the other two, we're going to say, ooh, with a little bit of human edit and review here, we can actually make this really good. Then we've come up with four ads in a fraction of the time that we can show to the client and have them give us feedback and say, oh yeah, run this one, don't run that one.
Mm-hmm. Nice. You know, I found that the best way to find, to implement something new, to try it, you know, even if you have no experience with that. For example, if I'm looking for someone who can help me with Google ads, Facebook ads, I can try myself. I usually fail, you know, but I understand how it works. I understand the process. It's the same with SEO. For example, if I get a new customer who don't know about SEO and ask me, please help to get SEO traffic, it doesn't work. You know, you need to understand the basic, because I usually get great results with someone who understands SEO, because we can cooperate like a cohesive team. You know, people can understand why we need to create high quality content, what kind of content strategy can bring results. That's why I usually tell if someone doesn't understand, take my course. It costs like $10-$20, not a lot, but you can learn from Mike Phillips, Lily Ray, many great experts, Jeff Coyle, because we can then cooperate together like a cohesive team for a long time. But, you know, if I try LinkedIn ads to pay like for one click, like $10 and more, it's expensive. Can you tell how to do it? You know, how to try it without understanding and then to cooperate with experts?
Yes, for sure. So here's the challenge that I had with LinkedIn ads when I very first started. There's a whole bunch of what I'll call best practices, quote unquote, that LinkedIn, they're just the simple recommendations or the defaults that are set as you set up your first campaign. And what I've found over time is that the majority of those suggestions or defaults are actually bad for you as a marketer. And I compare it with Facebook. The very first time that I ran a Facebook ads campaign, I didn't know what most of the options meant. I just was like, all right, well, I'll take whatever the default is. Let me talk a little bit about who my target audience, what they might be interested in. Okay, all that looks good, go. And it maybe wasn't the biggest success in the world, but I also didn't get gouged. It didn't cost me an arm and a leg to test out the platform. But I realized if I did the same thing with LinkedIn, I would be paying $40, $50 for a click. I would probably be targeting people who are outside of my target audience that I really want to hit. And on a platform like LinkedIn, where if we're paying a premium, we want to make sure that we're spending that money in the best way on our absolute best target audience. So I can give you a kind of an outline of what those initial pitfalls are that you want to avoid when you're starting your first campaign. The very first is right after you get through the targeting, there's going to be this little box checked called enable audience expansion. And that box is poison. Always uncheck it, because what it does is it allows LinkedIn to show your ads to less competitive audience members who aren't part of your targeting. And so that's when, like, unchecking that box will immediately help you with your lead quality. The next is in the bidding and budgeting section. It's actually one right before that. There's also a box called enable LinkedIn audience network. This is being able to show your ads to your target audience, not when they're on LinkedIn, when they're surfing around the web or in other apps or things like that. I would say uncheck that most of the time. There could be some limited use for that. The next is in the bidding and budgeting section. When you go down, the option that's going to be ticked is called maximum delivery. And if you listen to the word maximum, it's telling you what's happening. This is essentially LinkedIn saying, give us your wallet and we'll take as much out of it as we think we want. It seems like a conflict of interest there, but it's CPM bidding. It's paying by every impression that they show, and LinkedIn gets to bid as high as it wants to spend your budget. So what you do is there's two options there. You want to click the third option that says show more, show additional options. The third option is called manual bidding. This is where you get to tell LinkedIn, I am only willing to pay when someone takes action on my ad, when someone clicks, and then you get to choose a bid. LinkedIn's going to give you this ridiculous suggested amount for a bid. Like, we recommend you bid $20 per click, as your competitors might be bidding between, you know, 18 and 60 per click. Don't listen to any of that. Start much lower. Start at like $7 if you're targeting North America. If you're targeting other areas of the world, you can always start even lower than that, but start significantly lower than what LinkedIn is recommending. Then what you can do is slowly increment your bids up every day or 2 days until you actually start spending what it is you want to be spending. If you follow those, it's like four recommendations, that will make sure that you don't just fall into a pit the first time you try, pay way too much, and then decide, okay, LinkedIn ads aren't for me. That's way too expensive. They don't work. I'm out.
Yeah, I see it. I see often, you know, when people, once I spoke with a client who told me he wasted $400 on LinkedIn ads. $400? Man, it's nothing, you know. It's almost nothing, you know. You can learn from that. So yeah, if you spend $400, just learn how to make it different, you know, or find experts who can help you with that. Okay, let's talk about common mistakes. You know, in my life, I made a lot of mistakes. I keep doing them. I don't know another way how to learn. You know,
me too.
Basic strategies, best practices, then we can adapt to find something else. So can you tell what common mistakes people still do by creating LinkedIn ads and your tips how to find a much better way?
Yeah, so many of the most common mistakes come back down to those options that I told you when you first are creating the campaign. Like, they're using audience expansion because it's automatically checked, but uncheck it. They're just using LinkedIn's default bidding method. Like, use manual bidding and only pay for what you actually are getting performance on. There are some other areas of the platform, like others are like that example I shared earlier. You do the lazy route, which is, let me create one campaign that has everyone in it that I might ever want to go after, rather than being methodical and smart about, okay, let me break up this audience into multiple campaigns so that I can now have levers on each one of them. When I see director seniority is working really well, I can turn the lever up on that and give that more. When I see C-level people not working as well, I can pull that lever back. I can lower my bids or pause the campaign entirely. I also see people shifting their ads too quickly or not quickly enough. If you launch ads and you realize that for that first day or day and a half of performance, it's the learning phase for LinkedIn. It's still trying to figure out, like, what sort of a relevancy score is what they call it. Do we give these ads? Do we charge a lot for them, or do we not charge very much? Do we show them a lot or not show them very much? And so if you launch ads and within the first day or two say, oh, that didn't work, and pause them and try something new, they still haven't learned. So you want them to run longer. But we also see that if you've run the same ad creative for 20, 30, 40 days, people, it shows up in their newsfeed and they go, I've seen this before. I hate this brand. They're tired of it. They're saturated. And then they start ignoring your brand, which you don't want. So you do want to change up your ad creative enough to keep people interested and realize that something here is fresh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Awesome. AJ, I want to know about your strong side. You know, for example, when I speak with many experts, I understand that most of them are better than me, and many times can beat me in one side. But, you know, my strong side, it's like a jack of all trades, because I can manage. I can cooperate with great experts who can help me. For example, we have cohesive projects with Lily Ray, many others, you know, on my SEO course. I'm cooperating with people who can help me with my AI tool. Can you tell about your strong side? What is your strong side compared to many other companies that can help with LinkedIn ads? Just tell me about that.
Sure. So very early on, I figured out the LinkedIn ads platform, and I'm pretty certain that it was better than anyone else out there. Because I spent about $30 million on the platform before the light bulb went on and it clicked and I went, oh, I get how this works. I get how to pay less for every click. And I really, really wish that I was quick enough mentally and smart enough that I didn't have to spend $30 million to get there. Maybe I could have gotten there after spending a few hundred thousand. But now I understand. I understand where the platform is trying to charge you more and how to get the traffic for less, how to make your targeting better. And so that's what I would say is anyone can learn how to click buttons in an ad platform and run an ad. Like, I can't bring much value there, but on the very deep strategic stuff of how to structure your approach and your account, how to report all the way down through your sales process and tune and test and find out what's going to get you the lowest cost per sales qualified lead, that's where me and my team are absolute experts. And if you don't need that level, you can definitely go to anyone who's willing to just open up the platform and launch a campaign.
Yeah, got it. Nice. Yeah, that's good to have experience. And I have the question about creating the right buy-in persona. You know, for example, some companies have struggled to create buy-in persona. Even I remember Tim Solo from iChrefs shared that iChrefs couldn't create a buy-in persona because it's broad audience. Can you tell how to do it? I think it's important. If you create marketing campaigns for organic reach, probably you don't need like you when you create for paid ads. So any tips how to create a buying persona for companies, they have broad audience?
Yeah, I think we kind of get to cheat a little bit in business to business and with LinkedIn ads because our persona is really based around what job title someone has or what sort of company they work at. And so we don't necessarily need to have a very deep persona. We don't need to be able to say like, this is Tina and she went to this college and has this many siblings. Like, we don't need any of that. What we do need to know is the problem that we solve. What are the different positions, the different titles, the different companies that need this? And then let's start showing ads to them. We can target them very specifically by who they are professionally. But then we get some cool data back. Like LinkedIn will show you based off of your ads that have been running. They'll let you break it down by industry and by company size and by job function and by seniority, where I can see like, hey, I've shown my ad 300,000 times. Hey, there's this industry here that has a click-through rate that's three times other industries. Let's look into this. Maybe in the insurance industry or mortgage industry or something, they need our product worse than we knew they did, or we didn't even know they had this problem. So I would say you start out pretty simply by what's the job title and what kind of company has the issue I solve, but then you can start testing and tuning based off of the feedback of what users are actually doing with your ads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nice, nice. And I have final question about the future. You know, can you forecast what kind of future will be? Because LinkedIn, I think Microsoft owns LinkedIn, Microsoft owns OpenAI. And today, I think it's hard to ignore AI, probably impossible tomorrow. So any forecast about what kind of future will be on LinkedIn and how we can adapt today to this possible future?
Well, I haven't been able to figure out how LinkedIn could use AI, especially OpenAI, in the ads platform. So if anyone has ideas, like, please let me know. This would be an interesting thought experiment for me. But some movement that I've seen that has been really interesting, LinkedIn has come out with, and I think they call them expert articles, where LinkedIn has come up with a set of topics that they see people being really interested in. And then they'll have AI write a whole article about that topic. But then they'll invite other expert users on the platform to go in and add more to the article. So it's like this collaborative experience where multiple people are chiming in on this is how I use this and this is how this works and these are my experiences. I don't know how successful this is going to be. I have contributed to some of these expert articles just to see what the process is like. But I could totally see LinkedIn leaning into this and getting more content created for its platform, whether it's news content or industry updates or something like that, while still trying to highlight and put the focus on humans who are doing such good work, who deserve attention and are creating content. So not quite sure. That seems like the direction they're going now. I don't know what that looks like in the future, though.
Yeah, yeah. You know, yeah, it's hard to predict the future. I tried a few times by trading, investing, and I lost some money and I got it.
Me it too.
It's better to live this future and think more about presence, how you can get results today. AJ, it's a big pleasure to get in my show, to learn from you. You always, always share a lot of valuable insights. You're so kind to share this value with us. Tell our audience the best way how to keep learning from you, how to follow you, how to reach out to you.
Well, two great ones. If you really like getting geeky about LinkedIn ads, go listen to my podcast. It's called The LinkedIn Ads Show. It's by far the best resource out there for staying current and learning deeply about LinkedIn ads. The other one is come follow me on LinkedIn or even send me a custom connection request saying that you heard me on Anatoly's show. I would love to connect with you there. And I'm sharing new stuff every single day about LinkedIn ads. Those are the two best places.
Nice, nice, guys. I'll submit the link to the host of LinkedIn Ads Show podcast in the description, to LinkedIn account. Thanks again, AJ. It's a big pleasure. Love it. So valuable. Thanks for your time. You're so kind to share this value. Guys, thanks a lot for listening and watching us.